Welcome to the Wicked Podcast, where we read the business books you don't have the time for. I'm Marcus Kish.
And I'm Troy Norcross.
And we are your co-hosts for the Wicked Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Today we're here with John Key and his book, Finding Light in the Darkness. It's John's second book that we're looking at and talking to him about. And this is because the second book as well is about leadership conversations that he had during COVID and after about what is really going on in leaders' mindsets and the challenges they have in their business. And the stories are, as usual, really insightful and amazing and very relatable. And I'll hope you enjoy them as much as I did.
Before the interview, a quick word from our very first sponsor, Zencastr. We use Zencastr for all our audio and video recording, and it's a very nifty tool that splits up all the channels for very easy editing. Zencastr is used by 10% of all active podcasts. You can get 40% off the first 3 months and unlimited audio and video recordings with our special coupon code WICKEDPODCAST. I repeat, WICKEDPODCAST for 40% off. And now the interview. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wicked Podcast. Today we're here with John Key, one of our returning customers. Hi, John, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Marcus.
So you have a new book called Finding Light in the Darkness. Can you please tell our audience who you are and what's in the book, please?
Yeah, sure. I'm John. I run an independent consulting and advisory network. We advise companies on strategy and transformation. And we've been going now for several years, helping companies think about where to go next and helping them to implement strategies as well. And we found ourselves working for a number of clients during the COVID crisis. These were clients that were large multinational businesses working in multiple different sectors, including energy and transportation and consumer goods. And we were very privileged to be flies on the wall with management teams as they negotiated the pandemic. And the latest book is a compilation of some of the stories that we came across during those very challenging times for businesses.
Yeah, and I remember, I think the last time you described it as just having a lot of late night beers with some CEOs who would finally let their hair down and actually, you know, talk a bit about really what's going on and seeing sort of both sides of how people in the companies perceived it and how they perceived it as CEOs and the kind of decisions they had to make. So in the new one, tell us a bit about what were some of the highlights and kind of things in particular, insights that sort of stuck out for you when you wrote that?
Yeah, so the new one is organized a bit differently to the first one. So when we spoke before and I talked about the first book, it was organized around themes that we'd seen in the companies that we were working for. So we talked about leadership, we talked about planning, we talked about a number of other topics, which we found that successful companies had been observing through COVID. And in a sense, they weren't rocket science. They were the kind of things that you'll find in many leadership books. With this book, I've taken a slightly different approach, which is to tell individual stories of leaders, teams, and organizations. Each of them includes the story of the company itself and how it adapted, survived, and in some cases thrived through the pandemic. But it also includes the personal stories. So the challenges that the leaders of those organizations were going through in parallel. And as everyone will recall through their own story of the pandemic, it was happening on multiple different levels. And so we were all dealing with our teams, our businesses, and then at the same time, our own personal challenges through the lockdown, whether that was homeschooling or whether it was the fears and anxieties around COVID, or whether in some cases it was people that we knew that became very ill and in some cases died. And it was all happening at the same time. And what I've done this time around with the latest book is just sat and talked to CEOs and leaders of businesses and had them recall their own personal story of the pandemic and link to that the story of their business or team or organization.
So do you have any particular sort of favorite story and why it would be sort of your favorite story if you could pick one?
So they had a very strong sense of purpose. Then some of the other things that, again, I identified in my first book around planning, motivation, team building, collaboration, were all there in the charity. And almost on even more so than they would have been before the pandemic started. And that's true of all the other stories in the book. So if I were to pick another one, and this is a much smaller business in the book. And we found as we were capturing these stories that the most interesting ones, the ones where businesses, teams, organizations had adapted the most and had to really pivot in order to survive, tended to be the smaller companies, and therefore they were the more interesting stories. So one of the businesses in the book is a small business. It's a bakery, which was producing cakes for parties and weddings and other events pre-pandemic. And obviously when the UK went into lockdown, all of those events were cancelled, so that no more weddings, no more parties, none of that. And really the top line revenue of the business collapsed overnight. And what was interesting about that one is the way in which the business innovated and changed and pivoted to create a new business. So whereas previously they were selling large cakes for big gatherings, they rapidly pivoted into smaller cakes for parties that were distributed. So they would deliver cupcakes to groups of people on the same team or friends who were having a birthday party over Zoom. And they organized that extremely efficiently and quickly, so that they found these new revenue streams. And they also found that the market had been a weekend market, and they discovered that actually midweek became a very popular time to order cakes. They were delivering cakes all across London, and the business stabilized. And then they moved into a second business, which was online cookery courses, and discovered that was incredibly successful through the pandemic, because people were at home. Once they could get hold of baking ingredients, many people were furloughed, had lots of time on their hands. So they built up an online baking training business. And then actually following that, they built up a business which was also online, teaching people how to start your own bakery business. And it's an interesting story, because they could have thrown in the towel and like some businesses did, in fact, and allowed the pandemic to put them out of business, but they didn't. They lent into it. They innovated. They used their survival instinct in a way that we saw many businesses do during the pandemic. And there are eight of these stories, which also capture the challenge, the individual and personal challenges. So another one is a elite rowing team that was training for the Cambridge-Oxford boat race. And I spoke to a couple of the people in the Cambridge crew and the Cambridge coach, and their race was on, and then it was off, and then it was on again. And they had to train a group of rowers to row as a unit while they were all isolated and living at home in lockdown. And they went on to win the race. And in the book, I draw out some of the success factors and the things that the rowing team did in order to overcome the challenges of the pandemic. And it's in all of the chapters, including that one, it's the same general themes of leadership, collaboration, motivating the team. And they come through very strongly during the pandemic. As I say, a lot of leadership...
It's fascinating, and because you're already getting to another story, let me just rewind a bit to go to the first 1.5 stories you told. Because I think what I'm hearing through there, which I find always fascinating, is that, you know, those stories remind me of some of the stories from the NHS when nurses and hospitals just had to be creative about what was going on. So the previous world of processes, establishing them and having a very rigid system was just not working. And they just had to be very creative about what they were doing. And you saw that, with, like you said, there's a lot of smaller businesses who really had to pivot. I'm curious, what you mentioned, you know, sense of purpose, or you said just they really tapped into their survival skills. What do you think sort of in a more practical sense it needs for companies to pivot? Because I've seen it in big companies often where once you set a particular course, it's incredibly problematic or challenging to nudge it. Even in these days when we're saying, oh, we're doing agile, so every 2 weeks we review, we can reprioritize, and then we do it. But in actuality, often what I found is that it's really hard to course correct because people are, I don't know, uncomfortable, or it's political, or there are lots of other things in place where, you know, the nice label of failing fast is actually not an option. So what did you find? What were sort of key factors of allowing a pivot even to happen, apart from pure necessity?
So there are some very practical things that we observed in most of the businesses that we were working for. One of which was the governance structure, if you like. So a lot of businesses moved from a monthly meeting cadence, a quarterly meeting cadence with the senior team and the level below, to almost a daily cadence of crisis meetings and check-ins. And we were involved in a lot of these. My teams were helping to facilitate these critical daily check-ins, checkpoints and meetings, where you had chief executives and their teams and others involved. And they were able to make very quick decisions, but partly because of these crisis committees, which were very effective at getting things done. But also I think because there was a burning platform and a feeling that they had to take quick decisions at certain times during the pandemic, or the business would go out of business, or people were at high risk. So the classic example would be home working. So one of the businesses in the book, which is a financial services business, a bank, like many other businesses through the pandemic, moved to home working over a weekend, having been discussing the concept of home working for months and months and months beforehand. And in fact, we'd been helping them to think about the penetration of home working over time and how long it would take to move to home working before the pandemic started. And of course, all of our projections were blown out of the water because within 3 days, everybody was home working. And the other thing about that example actually is suddenly you had a breaking down of the silos in the businesses. So you had sometimes for the very first time in some of these companies, the IT department working closely with the HR department, with the operations functions, the business units, different regions, to achieve a goal in a way that they hadn't really had to in the past. And the job descriptions, the job titles went out of the window, and people worked together in a way that they hadn't done for some time. So in a couple of the businesses that I write about, it was the IT department that suddenly were their heroes. And in a couple of these businesses, they'd really been the villains in the lead up to the pandemic. Everyone loved to blame the IT department for everything, but then they came into their own. And it was a time, I think, for the businesses we worked with, for people to step up to the plate and to contribute to the survival of their business in a way that they hadn't really had to before. We also saw decision-making structures flatten. So suddenly you had senior people and their reports and some junior and frontline people working together in a way that they hadn't done before. And there was a feeling that everybody was in it together, if you like. So there's some very practical things that happened that enabled businesses to survive. What was interesting about some of those is they're all quite simple and ought to be replicable in times that are not crises outside the pandemic. And for some reason, businesses hadn't realized that until the pandemic came.
Yeah. Do you think it's and I mean, it's fascinating to listen to that because it's one of those things where, you know, as a consultant myself, you know, we often go in these companies and say, no, this is actually easier than you think, and you can do this tomorrow. Yet in normal times, they would not, oh, you know, it takes time and this and this and this and this. And suddenly, out of pure necessity, suddenly it was all possible. Suddenly it was all fine that people would work from home. And there was a lot of preconceptions that just seemed to disappear. But of my sort of maybe then obvious next question is that now that we're considering to be a bit out of that situation, even though there's other challenges, I guess, but they're nowhere near as critical or as different as we had to look at things during COVID. Have you seen many companies then sticking to that? Because some of the things I hear there when you say the hierarchy levels and the governance levels flattened, you know, for me, often I've seen a lot of extra management layers in companies that I find just inhibiting rather than really creating extra value on top. And once they're flattened down, have companies learned to then give managers different types of roles from then on, or, you know, to recognize it and keep going, or did they fall back into their old habits?
I think it's mixed. So to take the optimistic and positive side, in answering that question, a number of the businesses we've worked with have maintained these decision-making structures and have continued to use them post-pandemic. I think there are some very well-documented examples of huge reduction in lead times and You know, the classic one is the vaccine rollout from you know, time scales of 10 years to less than 1 year to get the vaccine. And if you look at that industry, in fact, those are those techniques and approaches and processes are now being used to find the next wave of vaccines, and it has stuck. So I think there are lots of examples of behaviors that have been maintained since the pandemic. Unfortunately, though, it's quite interesting. The premise in your question was quite interesting, that you said, you know, now that we don't have a pressing crisis, but of course we do. We've got these enormous challenges around the environmental crisis, which is very different to the pandemic, because it's not as immediate. With the pandemic, it was an incredibly urgent and immediate and terrifying event that that hit all of us, and it was the time frames around solving the pandemic issues were so short that human nature tends to be extremely reactive. And so we dealt with that crisis because it was so immediate. The climate change challenge is 100 times bigger than the challenge of the pandemic, but it's further out. And I think the lesson, one of the lessons from the case studies is if we could bottle some of the things that we saw through the pandemic, and if we could use those same muscles and those same techniques that we discovered during the pandemic to address climate change, then we would be able to crack it. That's partly why I'm trying to document some of the lessons from the crisis, because I think if we forget some of those lessons from the pandemic, it'll be a missed opportunity. And that's at a global level, but it's also a individual level and a business level. All businesses, and many of the ones that I'm now working with, have their own net zero targets and climate related challenges, and really need to get on with dealing with those. And yet they don't have the same level of urgency as they've all been very recently displaying through the pandemic. So I think the answer to your question is yes, we've learned, and there are some things which have stuck. Lots of things, actually. So take home working, for example. You know, we've all now realized that we can work effectively and productively from home, and most people have moved to some kind of hybrid model where they're able to do that, which is a huge learning from the pandemic. And so I think there are some very positive lessons, but I do think we could be doing a lot more to translate the lessons from the pandemic to other existential threats and crises and challenges.
Right. So in that sense, and we always have more questions than we have time. So unfortunately, I have to ask you the last question already. I'd love to ask you dozen more questions, because there's just so many stories and so many aspects of it, and I love just the practicality of having the stories told like that, because I can see, you know, there's a lot of other conversations about diagrams and models and whatnot, but I think those really practical stories show us with more evidence how maybe new management styles and new hierarchy and governance levels should actually are what much more productive in a sense. And that gets me to my last question, because you started mentioning hybrid work and work from home. And I just read an article by Michael Simmons who said we should look a bit back at Industrial Revolution, because we had this major spike of productivity. But since then, over the recent years, it has been plateaued a bit. But as you just evidenced, and I think I've seen evidence where actually productivity levels can go higher even when you work from home, or when you just apply yourself differently, or when you start using your IT department differently instead of just blaming it. What's your insight then on that, on sort of the productivity increase in combination with remote working? You know, is this sort of, do you see this growing more, or not just growing that it exists, but there's obviously a lot of voices out here, at least in UK and in other places, where you shouldn't work at home. You should actually come back to the company. So there's nearly political drive to push that. But you just said earlier, actually, it works quite well. What's your current view on that sort of, you know, is the genie out of the box, or do you think we let ourselves push that back again?
I think we'll end up somewhere in between. We've some of us have experienced a 100% home working environment, and obviously not everyone is able to do that. We sometimes forget that 50, 60, 70% of people can't work from home. Their job requires them to be at the front line and working out in the field or in the hospital or whatever it is. But for the ones that can work from home, I think we'll end up with a hybrid model, which is somewhere in between, which, by the way, is not far away from where we were heading anyway. So I think businesses will naturally find the most productive approach and adopt a level of hybrid working. I think what I would say, though, is that whether it's hybrid working or the decision-making processes that I talked about before, or some of the other observations during the pandemic, there was one overriding lesson, which was that people are at their most productive when they're motivated, energized, they have a sense of purpose, and it's much more about the attitude of a team or an organization and their desire to deliver, to win in the pandemic, to survive. That trumped everything, actually. And the companies that were really successful and came through the pandemic best were the ones that had that level of purpose, motivation, and positivity, and that's really why the title of the book is Finding Light in the Darkness, because it would have been very easy for businesses to give up, and the ones that didn't ended up being very successful through the pandemic and coming out the other side much stronger. And actually, I think that's the lesson that can be is the most important one to remember when we look at other challenges and crises. I think the home working debate has, along with a lot of the other questions around ways of working, is very much secondary. The most important thing is to have a really engaged, motivated, driven team or workforce. And by the way, what we found certainly in the companies that we worked with was that was highly, highly, highly correlated to leadership. And those leaders and their teams who could motivate their people, guide and lead their organizations through the pandemic and enable a really positive approach were the ones that were most successful. Now, if that's easier to do in an office, then great. If you can achieve it through and have remote working, then that's probably where a lot of businesses will go.
And it's so good to hear, because I think, you know, it's been my experience before and after COVID, where you look at, it's definitely not the amount of skills you have or the amount of money you have. You know, I've been, you know, I work for banks and other places, and those pieces were never the differentiator to actually make things really successful. As you said, it was normally about the people, the culture, you know, the qualitative aspects of a workplace more than the quantitative ones that seem to really elevate and make companies survive and so on. And I think it's a great theme to end up on, saying, look, you know, this is actually the value and the chance of the future that we have to focus more on these things, because they will come out on top every time rather than not. I think that's some great words to end this on. John, as usual, this was really nice. I'd love to, you know, maybe we should do this once a year and just go through story by story, because there's so many of them and they're so insightful. And I think the practicality of it, and, you know, your books are, I like them because more than other ones, they're just really from the factory floor, from the ground, from the actual people stories. And I think we rarely get that in books. And we should probably do that more, so that business books become a bit more humane of sorts and maybe bring that value up a bit better. So thank you so much for your time for today. Thanks, John.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot, Marcus.
You've been listening to The Wicked Podcast with co-host Marcus Kirsch and me, Troy Norcross.
Please subscribe on Podomatic, iTunes, or Spotify. You can find all relevant links in the show notes. Please tell us your thoughts in the comment section and let us know about any books for future episodes.
You can also get in touch with us directly on Twitter on @WickedAndBeyond or @Troy_Norcross. Also, learn more about the Wicked Company book and the Wicked Company project at wickedcompany.com.